Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Today's guest is John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle, joining us from Miami, Florida. But before we talk to John, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Now let's get to the conversation with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. Well, John, what a weekend in the nation's capital for the San Francisco Giants and yourself. I mean, just the travel, the hours spent at the yard. I'm sure you've probably tabulated it. What with the, you know, the rain out and the long rain delay, the 3-hour rain delay, the doubleheader, and then extra innings just to tack on to all of that. It must have been exhausting for everybody.
Well, I imagine for Bochy and the guys who played both games, including Joe Panik and Pablo Sandoval, for the most part, I was just standing there, sitting there watching it. But yeah, it was a long day, as Pablo said, a long day at the office. I think it's the first time I heard him say something like that. But kind of cute. It was crazy. The Nationals are terrible organization in terms of communicating with fans. Friday was an embarrassment. The players were walking out of the clubhouse on both sides in street clothes, having been told 30, 40 minutes earlier that the game had been called. No announcement in the press box, no announcement over the PA system. Fans were waiting there and thinking, well, there's going to be a game, hopefully, you know, buying the products, buying alcohol, whatever they purchase, you know, pennants, you know, foam fingers, whatever the heck they sell now.
Right.
And through it all, the Nationals knew exactly what the situation was, but they delayed announcing it, which was real low class, I thought. And so finally, they announced it to the press box. Another 5-10 minutes later, they announced it to the crowd. Well, by then, no players were around. I mean, it was just terrible. That's no way to run a organization. So anyway, they pushed back Friday's game to Sunday. So then now comes Saturday night. Sure enough, a 3-hour rain delay. So that was going to start at 4 California time, but it started at 7. So 7 o'clock is when Sunday's doubleheader was going to end, right? Because you right. have a game at 10 o'clock and then 4 o'clock, 3-hour game pushes. So that's 3 baseball games in 24 hours. Well, sure enough, that last game, Sunday night, went 2 extra innings. So it was more like 24 and a half hours of baseball. And Bochy said he had never seen anything like it. I had never seen anything like it. Giants lost 2 out of 3. But, I mean, it was, what, 29 innings? I'm told they were to get into Miami at about 4 in the morning, where they're going to start another 3-game series. Obviously the bigger difference is in Miami, there's a new ballpark with a retractable roof, so there's no rainouts, no delays. But it was something else. I don't remember being at the ballpark for so long, you know, maybe 12 hours Sunday. It was probably 10 or 11 hours on Saturday, and then Friday, maybe 8-9 hours, and there was no game. So a lot of waiting around for the players, but I'm sure once it started, they were a little bit elated they could move around a little bit because it's kind of a crazy weekend.
Yeah, I know. It makes you realize how lucky we are in California where we don't have those kind of weather problems in the summer. I mean, I remember many a rain delay when I was in AAA Rochester. And you made me think when you said the foam fingers, I think maybe the fans will change the finger on the foam fingers for the Nationals management for the way they handled it. That's terrible. But, you know, one of the highlights really for the Giants was that home run that Pablo Sandoval hit off Max Scherzer, of all people. And, you know, I saw some tweeting going on. Buster Olney was saying that the home run that Rafael Devers hit for the Red Sox against Aroldis Chapman was really, you know, one of the best ever. I got to put the Sandoval home run on a list somewhere. I mean, he hits it upper deck against Scherzer. That was pretty amazing.
It was pretty amazing. He seemed to golf it out there. And who would have thunk this guy would be anywhere close to the Giants lineup, let alone in the 3-4-5 spot, playing third base every day.
Right.
3 years ago when he walked out and said some nasty things, and then he ballooned, and then he got hurt, and then he didn't hit, and it was just a big nightmare in Boston, a $95 million bust. But, oh, welcome back. You know, you have a spot here. And it just turned out that it worked out for him because, well, a couple of things. You know, Christian Arroyo, who was supposed to be the third baseman of the future, well, he's still hurt. And so they give the spot to Ryder Jones at third base, you know, the next best thing, right? So Brandon Belt gets hurt. He's got a concussion. He's out, probably miss the rest of the season. So they move Ryder over to first base. Well, who's going to play third? Well, Pablo Sandoval's down in the minor league, so we call him up. They were hoping, I mean, they were saying anyway, that he had to prove himself to get that roster spot. He didn't exactly do that. But when he did get called up, Bochy talked more about we need a presence, we need a spirit, we need some, you know, something to get us going because we're just kind of dead right now. And, you know, he has provided a lift, a spirit. And, you know, whether this happens through September into spring training next year and beyond, I still think it's a long shot. He really has to wow them. But what do they have to lose, right? I mean, they've lost so much. Why not more? But in this case, lightning in a bottle is the hope, and he's still in his prime years. He doesn't look as big as he did a year ago with Boston, so there's that. But you kind of wonder, because they got Jones and they got Arroyo waiting in the wings to play third base, and will they give it to Pablo?
Well, not if he swings right-handed the way he is.
Not I mean, if he swings right-handed.
Yeah, he never was a great right-handed hitter, but now it's just, I mean, he's not capable at all, it seems.
And Bochy let him hit right-handed in a crucial situation in the nightcap, and I was kind of surprised. But I guess now's the time to experiment. You know, he's got more power, more lift, left-handed and right-handed. You remember, here's a guy who was born left-handed, and his brother taught him how to throw right-handed because Pablo said, I want to catch, I want to play the infield. And his older brother, Michael, he said, well, you can't do those things if you're left-handed. So he said, okay, I want to throw right-handed. I mean, who does that, right? And still, to this day, you see him sometimes warming up left-handed. So it's kind of cool. And what an arm right-handed for somebody who was born a lefty. So his natural side is lefty, and he developed into a right-handed batter and a right-handed thrower. But the right-handed side is never equal to left-handed side.
We'll have more with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this. The next time you're on your way to a Giants game, stop by Town's End Restaurant and Bakery for breakfast and lunch Tuesday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., or for brunch on the weekend from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Celebrating their 26th year, family-run and cozy, Town's End Restaurant and Bakery captures the spirit of San Francisco with homemade sourdough English muffins, scones, and breads. They're serving cage-free Petaluma eggs and have been organic since well before organic became mainstream. Consistent quality, 4-star Google reviews, and great service from loyal employees that have been there for over 20 years. Town's End Restaurant and Bakery, a Buster Posey home run away from AT&T Park, right along the Embarcadero at 2 Townsend Street in San Francisco. Earlier, you mentioned Brandon Belt and the concussion, and really that's the third time this year the Giants have had a scare, at least, with a concussion, because the home opener, Buster Posey, gets clocked in the helmet, and he goes on the concussion DL. You got Belt now, and there's concern about Joe Panic, and you watch that play, and I think, John, I watched it about 10 times from all different angles and everything, and, man, it was scary because the ball's coming in on that throw, and I don't know, still, after watching it 10 times, if it hit him in the head or and deflected, or if it was more the mitt of the catcher, Weeters, you know, tagging him. It looked like he got punched in the head, and, you know, I wonder about him, and how are the Giants going to deal with this?
Boy, where do you start with that? He didn't even know if he got hit in the head or the helmet.
Huh.
But we do know the helmet just flew off. His left contact flew out. He hit the deck. He was dazed, and he came out of the game. I said, "Well, that's it. He's done for the rest of the night, and hopefully this isn't a repeat of last year when he was plunked in June by Matt Moore, the Tampa Bay Rays of all people, a future Giant. And he actually hit a home run later in the game, played a week and a half more, and only then did he go on the concussion DL. And he spent a whole month on the concussion DL. Then he came back and hit low 200s and 50-some games. He still wasn't 100%. He played through it. And, you know, he said much later that he didn't fully recover until over the winter. And then he had a pretty nice spring, and now he's really their best hitter, right? Hottest hitter, anyway. But then last night happens, Sunday night happens, and what do? You leave him in the game. I was surprised. I thought he was done, like I said. I mean, this is a lost season. There's no way around that. And it's just about staying healthy and producing to win playing time, or at least consideration for playing time for next season. And Panic doesn't have to prove a darn thing. You know, second base is his unless he's traded. And the fact that that previous concussion of his, once you get one, it's easier to get the next, as we all know now. And so anyway, he played the rest of the game, and it went 11 innings. So he played 19 innings on the day. And I thought for sure, I mean, they had Calixte, who they called up as their 26th man, the infielder from AAA. You can use an extra guy in a doubleheader, according to the new CBA. So anyway, he was there. He wasn't used. And Panic, after the game, said, you know, he feels a lot better than he did the last time this happened, which was in June. But as we know from what happened in June, things kind of worsened. And that's, as we know, with concussion symptoms, can happen. It can hit you later rather than sooner. And so who knows on this? I mean, Panic is not going to play the opener in Miami. Bochy said it was a planned day off anyway. I'll check with him before the game to see how he's doing. I hope all is well, and I hope he'll remain well. The thing is, it just seemed there's some risk involved, but he continued to play, and obviously the trainers, Dave Greshner and his medical team, know a lot more about this than I do. Panic probably knows more about this than I do. I've never had one. I don't know if you've had one.
No.
But as far as we know, anyway. So you just have to take it for what their word is, and their word is right now that it's not as severe as it was, and apparently he's going to play through it until further notice.
One thing for sure, he was swinging the bat well. I mean, he hit that home run, and he had a great series, and, you know, he never really found his groove this year, I don't think, but in this series, it just looked like, you know, the real Joe Panic that people have been waiting for.
And he said after the game, and he was right about this, the balls he made outs on yesterday, and he only made three outs in, what, nine plate appearances, a couple walks and five hits, was it, were hit harder than the balls he actually got, you know, for hits. So he was hitting line drives all over that outfield, and you know, good for him, you know, to try to finish the season in a groove. But unfortunate for him that he was kind of dinged up yesterday, and Bochy says he'll have one more off day, and that was planned, but you know, we'll see with games Tuesday and Wednesday here in Miami.
A lot of discussion came out of this series in Washington because of the Bryce Harper injury on Saturday, and we weren't really thinking much about changing the bases, John. I mean, I don't think anybody even had it on their mind at all, but then all of a sudden Bryce Harper hits a wet base. It looked like a really serious injury. I mean, you thought maybe that could be a career issue right there, and it turns out it's a bone bruise, and he's going to be out for a little while. We don't know how long, but it brought about the talk about changing the base and doing something different with that. When that happens, you kind of look at it because it was a star player, and there's a number of ways to look at it, John. I mean, you know, you've got his agent Scott Boras saying, okay, well, we got to look at this. We got to talk about the bases here. And, you know, and I tweeted out, why not go back to the old bags, you know? They weren't dangerous. What's wrong with those old bags? I don't know. You know, back in the 50s and 60s, you know, that they used to use. But the other issue that I want to get into with this, because you can talk about the bases, but also should rules or bases be changed just because it's a star player? I mean, we saw what happened with Buster Posey. I don't know if that happens if it's a backup player that they change the rule around home plate. But, you know, for better or for worse, he doesn't like it. It's called the Buster Posey rule. Do you think that, you know, something should be changed here? And is it because it was Bryce Harper?
Well, I agree with you that the bags, almost pillows, right?
Yeah,
back
the
in the early days of playing the game, and you see the old highlight reels of, you know, from the 40s and 50s where, you know, the bags gave a little bit. They were kind of tied down. They weren't firmly placed down in the ground, and they weren't so high. They weren't so hard. And obviously, they weren't so slick after the rain.
Yeah.
But sure, if a star gets hurt, change the rule. And it shouldn't be a star, but the star will bring more attention to the topic, you know, like Posey, like Utley. We have a Chase Utley rule, right? No takeouts at second base. So the Posey rule, no takeouts at the plate.
Right.
You're right. Posey hates that reference,
right.
But I think it would have probably happened anyway. That's where we're leaning, health and safety. And Tony Clark of the union, the chief executive director of the Players Association, he talks about that a lot, health and safety. You know, he's trying to get it into the schedules, maybe more off days or maybe less crazy travel, like, you know, the Giants complain about playing a night game on the East Coast and then playing a night game on the West Coast the next day, you know, where that should be a day game on the East Coast to give that West Coast team time to travel and recuperate, so you don't push yourself, you don't risk injury by playing tired, playing weary, playing exhausted. So that's the theme of the game now, is health and safety. And if health and safety means better bases, maybe not so high, maybe not so slick, maybe not so hard, then yeah, change it. It sometimes takes a star to bring attention to a case like this. Now, on the other hand, you know, if you're going to leave the bases as is, I spoke with Ryder Jones, who was the first baseman on the play that Harper got hurt, and what a play Jones made. He dived to his left, right on the line, and Samardzija. And remember the last time Samardzija was charging an area that Harper was at, right? You know, he collided with Michael Morse.
And, right, and then he went out
Michael
with a concussion.
Speaking of
I forgot about his concussion, right.
And Morse, by the way, will be reunited with the team this week just to visit the clubhouse, get checked out by the trainers because he lives down here. So where were we?
The base.
We were talking about Ryder Jones. So Jones tells me that, you know, it was raining throughout that first inning, and the only way that base was not going to be slick was for a guy to come out every pitch and wipe it off. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, that's how it is in the minors. That's how it is in high school. It's how it is in college. When it rains, things get slick. Well, you know, you can't blame the grounds crew. Can't blame the weather guys. But maybe the grounds crew does a little bit more between innings in terms of wiping down the base. Not every pitch. That's kind of silly. But you would think that they would want to address this. The best player in the National League is out on the disabled list, maybe for the season, maybe not. I was thinking with that hyperextension, you know, who knows what kind of ligament damage or tendon damage was going to be sustained because of that fall at first base. And it wasn't Ryder Jones's fault, because Jones made the play, got out of the way. Samardzija backed off. Samardzija rushed over there thinking that, well, maybe I could get there for a, you know, first to pitcher out. But, you know, Samardzija was not going to get there in time, so Jones took it himself. So anyway, Jones is a rookie, but he's wise when he speaks about this. You can't have a guy come out every pitch and wipe off first base. And by the way, how cool was that scene with Roy Hobbs in the slow motion rounding the bases and jumping on these pillow-type bags and it, like the dust coming up, and, you know, nobody ever slid on those bases, right? Those, you know, Gehrig circling the bases and all the way through Mantle and into the 50s that used those things. It was soft. It was, you know, maybe you tripped around it. But when you slid, you didn't slide into something that couldn't move. You slid into something that gave. And maybe there were fewer ankle injuries because of it. And maybe there were fewer thumb and finger fractures. You know, Mike Trout was out with that because he slid head first into one of these hard bases.
Yeah, who knew those old bags were that much safer? And how about even helping the umpire on a call at first? Because if your foot hits it and there's that dust coming up, then it kind of helps him to see when your foot hits
the base.
That's
a great call. You're right. That'll show on the instant replay.
That's part one of our conversation with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. Join us again on Wednesday for part two. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.